This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Michelle and I'm from Manchester. I joined OTI because a friend of mine had told me about the podcast. So I started listening and I was hooked. It really made me sober curious. I was only a weekend drinker, so there was no rock bottom. And having just turned 50, I thought, I'm going to go for this. I've now clocked well over 100 days and it does feel brilliant. The community is lovely, although I'm a little bit shy to join the Zooms, so I just tend to hover in the background. All I would say is, it really is amazing what you can do when you put your mind to it, and everyone is so kind and supportive. Thanks.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Welcome to Over the Influence. This is the biggest, the best, the most positive podcast in all of the alcohol-free land, singing about sobriety. If you are just joining us for the very first time, welcome. I will give you a quick reintroduction as to who we are in just a sec, because if you are just joining us for the first time, this is series three, the series that came obviously after one and two, but it never ever stopped. There's about, 70, 80 episodes to go back at, something like that. There's an absolute shed load. Fill your boots, loads of inspiration, loads of brilliant stories, loads of motivation, and most importantly, a whole load of laughs as well. If you're thinking, who is this northern woman that hasn't stopped talking, come up for air just yet? I am Sharon Hartley. That's my name. You can call me Shaz. Just coming up for 4 years alcohol free. To cut a very long story short, took a break from alcohol back in the summer of 2018. So it meant to be a 3 month break. Decided it was going really, really, really well. Loads of really good stuff started to happen once I got over the horror of an alcohol-free summer. It was the best thing I ever did. Now loving alcohol-free summers. 4 years alcohol-free, and basically will bang on to absolutely anybody that will listen about the benefits of sobriety. I'll come up for her now, take a breath and allow Ben to say a little bit about himself. Hello, producer slash co-host Ben.
Hello, my name is Ben Anderson. I live in Liverpool. I'm 34 years old, fiancé to Jem and a dad to be. It's racing towards the due date, Shaz, the 8th of October. Had to think about that then. Can't get that wrong. We've got 9 weeks left until the baby is going to be here. So very excited about that. I've just checked, Shaz, and we are racing towards our 100th episode. It's not 70, it's not 80. We are in the 90s. We are nearly on 100 episodes of Over the Influence, which means basically 100 hours of us chatting alcohol-free nonsense.
That's a lot of chat, isn't it?
And you know what? I've said this before, but people join the community and they go, I found you guys 3 weeks ago. I've listened to every episode. And you go, how have you listened to every episode in 3 weeks?
You need to lie down in a dark room after that.
Where did you sleep? Yeah, that's a lot of Ben and a lot of Shaz. But look, long story short, I gave up booze over 2 years ago. It was only ever supposed to be for 3 months. I fully intended to have a break and go back to drinking how I drank before. But I thought, you know what? This is good. Let's extend it to 6. Let's extend it to 12. Got to day 366 and thought, why would I ever go back to drinking? I've seen too many positive changes to even consider drinking again. And I love it. And even in 2 years, I've really seen kind of attitudes change towards people who decide not to drink, which is fabulous. At the start, lots of people were questioning me on it. Why are you doing this? Go on, just have one. And now more and more people are like, that's cool. Nice one. That shows a lot of kind of strength of character, mate. Impressed with you. Well done. And I love that. And I love that that's happening. And I love that our podcast is helping that to happen. You know, we're loud about sobriety. Even if you don't want to be, that's totally cool. We'll sing about it from the rooftops along with our fabulous guests. And Shaz, you know our guest quite well, don't you, today? You've known each other for a long time. I don't. It's very nice to meet you. But you guys have got history that involves fancy dress and aubergines.
Right, okay. So, yeah, there's history. Not that sort of history. If I start trying to explain it now, it's all going to come out really, really weird. So I'm not going to go down That's the a aubergine tease, root. Yeah, just okay. Hold that thought. Okay, it will become apparent during the course of this recording. Yes. So today's guest is somebody that I have known pretty much for the best part of 4 years. We met in an online community when I just started out on this. Well, what I thought at the time was a really stupid idea to take a break from booze, because why? Why would you? What a crap idea that was. It turns out it wasn't, actually. But that's
thank you for clarifying. Yes. Yeah, on the World Saving Alcohol Free Podcast. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, one of the best things I ever did. Obvs. Yes, life-changing. Obvs.
But back then you thought...
Back then, I thought this is a waste of time. This is just ridiculous. And so myself and today's guest met in an online community. And he was one of the first people that I sort of came across who was sharing his own story of sobriety, why he decided to take a break from alcohol. And from that point I've just watched all these changes. It's not for me to say, actually, so I'm gonna shut up, because I'm banging on again. Justin Jones, welcome to Over the Influence. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here, to see you again after a very, very long time. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Welcome. How the hell are you?
Thank you, Sharon. And thank you, Ben and Sharon, for letting me be on the podcast. I'm doing pretty well at the moment. It's been a strange, weird, wonderful 4 years alcohol-free. A lot has happened in that time. Met a lot of wonderful people, yourself included, Shaz. Things are sort of ticking along quite nicely at the moment.
Fantastic. Well, for the purposes of the recording, I realise this is a Zoom call. Justin, you look really, really well. You look great. You've still got the sober glow.
Yes, it's certainly. I'm sort of managing to survive the heat by shutting all the windows, all the curtains in the house, and just try and stay out of it as much as possible. But yeah, I'm still loving sobriety, loving being alcohol-free. That's I more think of myself as being alcohol-free than sober. Sober always, to me, sort of implied a little bit boring, a little bit staid, no risk, which I also do. But it's the freedom I got from getting rid of the booze that's been such a huge part of my life in the last 4 years.
So as you said there, we met, didn't we? It's around 4 years ago, so I'm coming up for 4 years alcohol-free. I was always chasing your tail. You've just hit 4 years. Huge congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, 4 years on the 2nd of July. It was meant to be the 1st, because that's when I said, right, I'm starting this on the 1st of July, beginning of the month. First thing I did, I drank. So it was like getting on the start line of the race and falling flat on my face. So I went, okay, that was stupid. I get up and I'll start again. 2nd of July, right, I'm off. I can do this.
Justin, can I ask, so are you based in the UK now? Because it doesn't sound like a regional UK accent that you've got.
I'm from the southeast of the planet. I'm originally from New Zealand. I live in Kent, and my wife and I have lived here for the last 10 years. After we got married, we moved out here from New Zealand. But I'd lived here another 4 years prior to that. So I've lived here about 14 years out of the last 18.
Because, of course, you know, we often talk about the UK being a bit of a boozy culture. So you got to experience that in all of its glory.
Yes, I came across, and it was the land of cider. Yes. that was my drink of choice. It was sort of, I've always had a bit of a checkered history with drinking. I'd had times where I sort of went, nope, I'm not touching it for 6 months or more. Also, but growing up in New Zealand, we have a similar sort of culture that we imported from the UK and from Ireland. It was very much there's literally a song called Rugby, Racing and Beer to sum up New Zealand culture. So it was very much. You would, when I went to uni, it was, of course, you would drink on a Saturday was the main drinking night, but it would also be Thursday, because nobody drank on a Friday, because a lot of people played sport or played rugby on the Saturday, and you didn't want to turn up to a game hungover to be tackled by other large blokes. So it was a case of people went out drinking on a Thursday, then they stayed home Friday, and then they went out drinking again Saturday, and that was pretty much the culture I'd sort of learnt a lot of my drinking around. And then, other times I went through sort of I would just go back to New Zealand, you wouldn't typically drink during the week. It was sort of, and you wouldn't drink at lunchtimes. That was considered a bit strange for the New Zealand culture, but weekends, it was like, it's all on. You drink to get very drunk. And if you fall over, well, that's just funny stories for everyone.
Justin, you started out then on your break from alcohol back in 2018. If it's all right with you, can we rewind a bit further back to
sure thing.
2016?
Tell
us about your life and what happened and what sort of led you to ramping up the drinking.
It was sort of around sort of the start of 2016 and probably just a little bit before sort of at Christmas 2015. My wife, Lucy, she was pregnant. We were expecting twins. And on Boxing Day morning, Lucy got up and said, "I'm bleeding. We need to go to the hospital now." So it was a case of we weren't expecting it. The due date wasn't until April. So this was like, okay, right, got to get in the car, drive to the local hospital. And they're saying, okay, right, we're going to put Lucy in an ambulance. We're going to drive her up to guys in St. Thomas in London. So we were fully expecting, the boys decided they were going to come very, very early. So we went up to London and we stayed there till, fortunately, everything stopped once we got up there. And on the 4th of January, our boys were born, Aramis and Maximus. Aramis was 850 grams, Maximus was 750 grams. And this is it, tiny though. So they were only 25 weeks plus 6 days gestation. So really on the cusp of, are they going to make it or not? And so we spent a lot of time in various hospitals in London, and then later on moving back down to Kent. We spent the next 4 months in hospital with the boys. So as they grew and developed, and as time went on, it looked like, okay, things are going well. They're growing fine. They're developing fine. And it got to around May, and basically they said, okay, right, they're healthy enough. They can go home. They're going to be on oxygen support, but they're allowed to go home. And we thought, oh, thank goodness, this is wonderful. Sort of, we can get them home. We can start being a regular family. And it was probably no more, it was about a week or so after we got home that, so this is my wobbly bit. So Maximus, my wife said, you've got to come down. Maximus isn't breathing. So I bolted down the stairs. Ironically, I hadn't been drinking over the time that sort of they had been in the hospital. I'd sort of been working on my fitness again. I'd stopped drinking. So I rushed down and started CPR. And it was, the paramedics were there like within minutes. And between them and then the helicopter was brought in. We got him breathing again. And he was airlifted up to London to go to King's College. But his little body took a hell of a beating. And it was on the Tuesday. Sorry.
Just take your time, Justin.
Yeah, it was on the Tuesday. They said, he's not going to make it. There's really no hope. He's going downhill. So we made the decision to turn off his life support. And that really was the start of when things started to go bad. And of course, sort of in New Zealand, we're taught, you know, the way you cope with all these feelings is you drink. So you use it to celebrate, but also when someone dies, you get drunk to basically deal with those emotions. So that's really where things kicked off. And it was an awful time over the next sort of number of months. It was because there was things like inquiries through the ambulance service. There was a coroner's inquest, which was a wonderful thing to go through. And during all of that, it was sort of, I'd had periods when I'd be coping, then periods when I'd not. And then my brother passed away in New Zealand. He was only 50, and he died of what's called a thoracic aortic dissection, where the main artery from his heart literally shred, and he died pretty quickly. He wasn't healthy, but it was still a pretty bad shock. My mum then also developed leukemia. She'd had multiple myeloma for years, but it then developed into leukemia, and she passed away on 31st of December. So if people say 2016 was a bad year, I say, yep, hold my alcohol-free beer. It was a lot of that sort of really sort of, it was just seemed to be one thing after another. It really sort of kicked it off. And I went through periods of sort of, I was quite secretive with my drinking. I would wait till everyone else had gone to bed, and then I would be drinking to numb myself off during that time when no one else would see. So that pretty much carried on that way. I'd have periods where I'd go through grief counselling, and I would stop drinking for a bit, and then alcohol seemed to always find its way back in, as it does. It seems to sneak its way back in, saying, "Hey, look, you know, have a drink, you're okay." And it was sort of, so I'd go through periods of sort of going, "All right, I'm going to moderate it," and then I'd sort of go, "Oh God, this is such a pain. Why do I have to?" Why do I have to control it? And then I'd go back full drinking. And it sort of, and then, and that carried on through 2017. And it was really sort of, it was more of the same. The work where I was working, it had always been quite a toxic working environment. It was sort of it really started getting to me and getting me down. I was starting, my mental health was taking a definite sort of nosedive, and I think the alcohol did play a part. It was making me very depressed at times. I was getting very anxious, and it was kind of an anxiousness around things that were going on. And it was a case of I think it was Henry Kissinger who said, "Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't out to get you." And I was then starting to drink to deal with the stress, and trying to sort of keep an eye over my shoulder, sort of, are people trying to sort of push me out? Because I was actually, if you looked at me from the outside, you think, wow, this guy's pretty successful. He's got a successful personal training business. He also spends time with his kids. He does some obstacle racing, and he looks pretty successful on the outside. But it was really on the inside, I was dying. I was getting very, very down. And it was only by chance I decided to do a Spartan obstacle race in the April of 2018 that things really started to turn around. And I thought, you know, I'm pretty fit. I've done obstacle races. I'm going to go and do the Spartan race. I've heard of it, but I thought I'll give it a go. And it completely kicked my ass. And I came in a time and I thought, oh, that was really bad. I'm really unfit here. And I thought, I'm not having this. I'm going to go and do another race. And so I booked for another race in June. And I happened to meet some people, part of a community, that were promoting the idea of take a break from alcohol and see what benefit it has. And I was kind of, when I went to the race, I was thinking, you know, maybe I should take a break. So it's just funny how life works sometimes. It's like, I thought, maybe I should take a break from alcohol. And then the sign comes up. Take a break from alcohol. Take a challenge. But it was really by going into that year that I and working on training towards something. And it got round to May of the next year. There was a repeat of the first Spartan race that was held a little bit later on. And this time I ran the Saturday race, and I ended up running over an hour faster to complete that race. So I shed like 30% of my time and finished really, really well. And then the second day, now this leads back to something that happened at the very beginning of April, where I met Sharon.
Oh, we're not going there yet, are we, Justin? Are we going there now? We're going to save that.
You know, because that the race where that all took, that purple all took place was the very next day. So it kind of, it would seem a bit strange to not explain the background of the story.
Carry on, just to carry on.
So April Fool's being as April Fool's does, I had sort of started coming out and talking more about races, and I said, I've got this race coming up, and Sharon liked to talk about don't be a dick. And the classic dick emoji is the aubergine. So I said on April the 1st, I'm going to do this Spartan race dressed as an aubergine. Now, this was on my part, this was all just part of April Fool's, a practical joke, sounded realish enough that people had a great laugh and said, okay, so when are you doing this? And I was like, uh-oh. I basically had ended up sort of, so many people believed that I was actually going to do it. I thought, well, I can't back out now. And I thought,
because you'd look a dick, Justin, obviously.
So I thought, how funny would it be to race a Spartan race dressed as an aubergine? Because Spartan races are considered quite serious. They're not sort of your typical fun run sort of dress up.
Yeah, they're a bit full on, aren't they?
They can be a touch competitive, is the diplomatic way of putting it. So I got myself an aubergine costume for the Sunday race.
which that is a where?
Why?
You can find so everything on Amazon.
I think that's a different part of Amazon to the part that I shop on, Justin, maybe. You wouldn't get yourself a big giant aubergine down at Smithies on Bold Street in Liverpool, I'll tell you that.
So I turned up and I thought, you know, I'll just race this for fun. And the previous year I'd done this sprint race and it was about an hour 45 I did it in, so which is considered quite slow. And I was asked if I'd ran that race backwards, because when I finished the race dressed as an aubergine, I actually finished it in about 57 minutes. So I'd shaved about ridiculous 47 minutes off my time. And it got a laugh for everybody. Sort of the staff, the volunteers out on the course, the participants. And there's a wonderful photo that I'm sure Sharon can post.
Actually, with your permission, when this episode goes out, there's only one photo that we're going to share, Justin.
Oh, of course. It's that one of me doing the fire jump, dressed as an aubergine.
Oh, it's so funny. It's amazing. And thank you so much for sharing such a painful private part of your story, Justin, because I vividly remember when we met online, you know, you're reading each other's posts, and obviously I came across yours and you shared about Maximus back in 2016. Yeah. And my heart just went, oh my God, oh my God, this guy. I can't imagine the pain, and not only your little boy, your brother and your mum as well. And I thought, but he's doing this. He's doing it. He's removing alcohol at a time, Justin, where, as you said, all I can imagine you want to do is just drink away that pain.
Yeah.
So at what point did you go, right, okay, there's a lot going on. I've got a lot to deal with here. I've got to get through this, because obviously when people remove alcohol, we hear it time and time again. The problems don't go away. Your pain doesn't go away. You've really got to face up to it, haven't you, and deal with it. What happened then?
I started to go back and just sort of process through everything that happened, because the grief hadn't gone away. It had just been sort of more or less just kicked down the road. So I went through a lot of sort of the anger, sort of trying to sort of, it obviously happened. There was no taking that back, but just trying to deal with that grief and recognize that certainly my mum would have been very proud of me for giving up drinking. It was something she didn't. I don't ever recall seeing her more than tipsy, but I think she'd have been quite proud of me for stopping drinking. But it's just, we're taught that this is the way we deal with it. But it was sort of, I had to go through a lot of internal processing of those feelings. I did do some grief counselling once I'd made that decision to go alcohol free, and that did help. But it was sort of, it allowed me time to acknowledge all of those things that had happened, because it had been 2 years since Maximus had passed away. So there was I'd processed some of that grief, but not all of it. And it really was going back and going through that process at a time to say, okay, right, now's the time to work through all this.
And of course, through all this pain, you've still got to be a dad.
Yeah.
And you've still got to be a husband, and you've still got to do the day to day life, haven't you? As a family man.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so grateful that Lucy and I managed to stay together through all of this, because the death of a child, it causes families to split and rupture. It's a very hard process to deal with. But we managed to stay close and stay together through all of this. My children still needed looking after. My son Aramis, he was on oxygen for a long time. Sort of he carried on with oxygen support for a long time. Through 2016, and I actually found I started to become a better father when I let go of the alcohol, became alcohol free, because I wasn't. My kids have a wonderful way of pushing my buttons.
Sure, they do.
That still happens to a degree, but you know, I found I don't snap like I do. Whereas before it might have been push a button and run for it, and my temper was getting quite short. I found I can deal with it a lot better. I can process things a lot more. I can stop and count to 10 sometimes. We still have my kids can still push my buttons, but I'm better at dealing with it. I'm more relaxed in general. I'm less likely to get into that point where I sort of lose my temper. And we've now in that time, since going alcohol free, we've got another little daughter. So our Rosalie, who was born in November 2019,
she's beautiful.
Yes,
by the way, your family is beautiful, Justin.
Thank you, Shaz. It was wonderful that I was completely alcohol free. So all through the pregnancy, and that actually became part of the healing process for us, because after two quite traumatic experiences in hospitals, it had been my wife's dream. She said, "No, I want to have a birth at home. I want to have a water birth. I want everything sort of to be done here." And we were able to have that. Her pregnancy went right. It was we were only short of the due date by about 12 hours. Not even 12 hours, 5 hours. The labor itself went very, very smoothly, and she gave birth to an 8-pound-12 bouncing baby girl, and she's still big, and she's such a little sweetheart. She's really been a healing process, we never forget about Maximus. It's not like one child replaces another, but just having her come into our lives she's been just such a joy, and it's wonderful to have her and my three other children together.
We are just going to take a quick break from our chat with Justin. Oh, Ben, what a lovely, lovely guy. What a story.
Amazing man. And actually, we're about to get to the bit in a minute where I have a bit of a cry. You hear stories like this, and I don't know, I think it's because I'm about to be a dad myself. Yeah. And it's already changing my opinion and thoughts on loads of different stuff, and giving me a kind of appreciation for things that I don't know, just what an amazing, amazing bloke. And the rest of this episode is great, and we should get back to it quickly.
Yeah.
But before we do, we just wanted to say that, look, you know, we feel so privileged that people share their stories with us like this. And we're doing it all the time in the community. It's such a lovely corner of the internet, the Over the Influence community. It is so supportive and so encouraging. And it's amazing. You see people in there blossom. You see people who have had some real shit happen to them and have overcome it and have put one foot in front of the other and gone, I want a better life here. I want to do the best that I can for me and my family. And I know that to do that, I need to be alcohol free. It inspires me every single day. it surprises me every day as well. And it's the Zoom calls for me. I absolutely love the Zoom calls. And we're doing them all the time now. And we're ramping them up. The more people that join, the more calls we'll add. Simple as that. Like, they are amazing. And it's a private, supportive, lovely space for you to talk about whatever you want to talk about. So if it sounds like something that you'd be interested in, overtheinfluence.co.uk. And I've got nothing else to add, Shaz, have you?
All I will say is that, as you've been hearing, Justin has shared something so heartbreaking, so personal, you know, and it's a really big deal to be able to do that. And I know we've said it, we really do appreciate it, and we're very thankful that Justin is chatting to us today. And as Ben was saying there, within our community, on the Zoom calls and via the DMs, you can get in touch with other people privately without revealing your personal details. The stuff people share in there, it's not always... Some people stop drinking for very, very serious reasons and for very upsetting reasons and for really personal reasons. Our community members feel safe, they feel supported, and they feel that they can chat and share. And once you are in a place where you can do that, I think in many ways, magic can start to happen. And it's wonderful. Anyway, enough about us. If you do want some more information about the community and information on the Zoom calls and whatnot, it's all on the website, overtheinfluence.co.uk. But let's get back to our chat with Justin.
Justin, it was... I knew the story about Maximus because Shaz sends me very thorough notes on every guest that we ever have on Over the Influence. I read the story and I cried when I read the story. And then you told the story and I thought that I wouldn't, but I did.
Yeah.
And I think it's a, you know, I think this time a year ago, I would have heard your story and been empathetic because, you know, I think at my core, I'm a nice guy. Don't ask some people, but yeah, most people say I'm a nice guy.
Yeah.
And I think knowing that, you know, we're having a baby soon, we know it's a boy, we're hoping for the home birth, the water yeah. birth, things that I never even thought about before. You know, it just, we've had a couple of moments where it's scary, anything, when you have to go back for another checkup or whatever it is. And I think it just made it feel, I think the fact that I'm now there, I can't imagine what you and your wife went through.
Yeah. Thank you, Ben. I can see that.
No,
I can see it's really touched you, and that's...
It has, but I think, therefore, it's even more amazing what you did next. Anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and hats off to you, because we really hear a lot of stories, and I think, you know... The fact that it's so confronting giving up alcohol in so many ways, you know, I think what a man that you are to do that and to remove alcohol, to stop that thing that was numbing those feelings and go to the grief counselling, to talk about that so openly as well. You know, to hear a man talking about that, you know, it's important. And I just think you're a really brave guy, and I think you're a really nice man, and we don't know each other, but even just through this, you know, the fact that you tell your story and then 5 minutes later you're taking the piss out of you and Shaz and aubergine costumes.
Let's face it's not hard, is it, to take the piss out of me? Just to...
yeah.
I take the piss out of myself all the time.
Can we talk about, you know, some of the... So obviously, you know, you gave up alcohol, you had the worst year ever in 2016. 2018, was it that you removed
alcohol? 2018 that I removed alcohol after spending a lot of time sort of not confronting these issues, but they pretty much stayed there until such time as the alcohol dropped out. And then I was like, okay, right, I've got to deal with this. I've got to deal with the within a couple of weeks of going alcohol free, I realized, well, hang on, this work environment has always been this way. I was dealing with it better when I wasn't drinking, but I went, no, it's never gonna not be toxic. And the longer I stay in it, just the worse it's gonna get. It was sort of, it had actually very much affected my mental health. I had been signed off from work for 2 weeks by the doctor for stress. And I went, no, I don't want this anymore. I talked to a friend of mine who owned his own business elsewhere. And I said, I'm going to move. I don't care if none of my clients follow me. I'm going to move my business elsewhere and start and sort of be in a better, more positive work environment. So I started actually making changes and taking back some of the control in my life and looking at where I can do things better. And it was tough because, interesting, I jumped ship, and then six months later, their business went bankrupt. And I was like, uh-oh. Okay, right, what's the first thing to do? Right, can't drink. That's not going to solve anything anyway, and I'm not going to go back now. This was, must have been about March of 2019. So I'd been alcohol-free now 9 months. I went, I can't go back to drinking. I'm going to find somewhere else to work. So I sort of went, okay, right, I know of this place, and I'm going to go talk to the owners. And I found out a couple of the other guys from my gym had also gone and talked to the owners. So I thought, oh, okay, right, I've got to really research this place, make sure that they'll I'm going to fit in and take me on. So it was a case of, right, jump ship again. And I learned to cope through that. And the time, there was a lag time between when one gym closed and another opened. So it's like, right, how do I deal with that in sort of terms of still serving my clients while I can't train inside of a gym. So I ended up in local parks. And little did I know, a year later, it was exactly a year after my gym closed, I went to the new gym. And it was a year later, March 2020, lockdown happened. And all gyms were one of the first things that were shut down. So for me, it was a case of, okay, I can deal with this. I've been told I can't work in a place before. It's happened now twice. So I started doing online work with my clients, sort of doing the infamous home workouts, being my own version of Joe Wicks at times. So it's sort of, I learned a lot of how to problem solve fast because to work it within my own head, how to change on the fly and not think, oh God, life's been crap with me again, I'm going to have a drink. Because that never solved any of my problems. It just sort of, in fact, probably escalated a number of them. But I learned, right, okay, how do I change on the fly and how to cope with things a lot better? Sorry, and now that's my digression. What was the original question?
You know what? I can't remember, but I like where we are at now. Do you think then that kind of that bounce back ability, as such, you know, just purely from a work perspective now, do you think if you'd been a drinker still, would you have had that kind of professional resilience? I suppose
no, definitely not. It would my
and,
first,
and you can say that, you know, yeah, clear cut, definitely not.
Definitely not. I would have probably gotten very angry. I would have been very stressed. I would have probably looked around, who else can I blame? And I probably would have gone on quite a rant. I probably would have lost my temper. And then I might have calmed down, settled down. Probably my wife would give me a slap around the ears and say, hey, look, don't be a dick. Start working on some solutions here. It would have taken me a lot longer to get around to that point of saying, right, okay, this needs to be dealt with. How do I deal with it?
Yeah. Okay, because I'd love to talk about more of the positives, because you're over 4 years alcohol-free.
Yeah.
So that kind of, you know, the bounce back ability, number one, it sounds like calm, just kind of measured.
Much more calm, much more measured. I've had to learn to communicate with people to solve if there have been problems at work or elsewhere. I've had to learn to communicate, not just bottle it up and then go home and drink. So learning other problem-solving skills. So I've learned a lot, definitely the calmness, and certainly feeling a lot fitter, a lot healthier. I don't get sick very often, and if I do, it's normally for not very long before I'm sort of back up and going again.
So a whole raft of positives.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, isn't it mad that I always like to ask people directly about questions like that, you know, that, But can you definitely say, because it is almost, you can't really, it is impossible, isn't it? But then at the same time, you do know.
Yeah.
You do know that this wouldn't have happened had I not removed alcohol, because it does change your character, doesn't it? It does change the kind of core of who you are.
I think that sort of it allows you to really express who you are. It sort of, that would be more, it sort of allows your real self to come out, sort of rather than having to put up this sort of, this veneer of who we think we're supposed to be. You actually become a lot. Yeah. I felt like I was regaining a lot of the best parts of myself. And I know that sounds cheesy, but it's pretty true.
It doesn't. And you know what? Maybe change is the wrong word, because you're right. Like, I'm not sure if you heard the episode of a few weeks back where Shaz surprised me on my 2 years out.
Yes, I did.
My fiance Jem
came
on it. And she said that, you know, she loved me when I was drinking and she saw all these really good qualities in me. But just sometimes it was kind of, it was clouded a little bit, I think was her phrase. And it couldn't quite, those things couldn't quite come out because there was this kind of cloud that was created by the alcohol. And I think that's it, isn't it? You're right, you don't change. It just allows you to kind of, to really be who you are. And who you are, you don't change at your core. It just, you rediscover who you are at your core, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was definitely it. So I see we just had a question come in from Maggie.
Hang on, Shaz. Justin's doing our job here.
He's so just still get me co. You crack on, love.
I had a message come in. Because our community members, so Maggie, if you are an Over the Influence community member, you can watch our podcast being recorded and you can ask questions to our guest live in the chat box. I mean, Justin, usually we'd read out the question, but I think, you know, over to you.
Fill your boots, Justin. Come
on. Okay, so Maggie has asked, Justin, at what point in your sobriety journey did you feel the change? We felt like a better parent and a better person. I'd certainly say it was probably sometime over 100 days. It was certainly as time was going on. I'd say certainly by the end of that first year, I would say definitely it was being noticed by myself and my wife as well. That I was becoming much more calm. So I think that would, the better person, I've always kind of been pretty much into sort of personal development, sort of being a personal trainer, and my uni degree was in psychology. I've always sort of been driven to sort of be better than I was previously. So I've always had a bit of that drive, but the alcohol, I think, diminished that. It sort of, you end up getting a little bit stuck. And I found I was always, it started, booted me back onto the path of sort of trying to be a better person, better in my work, better as a trainer, maybe take a bit of a different direction with my work, sort of. And yeah, I'd say certainly by the end of that first year, it was definitely, I was well on my way. I can't put it down to a set point, but that I said, right, that's it. But it was definitely between that time of sort of the 90-100 day mark, moving on towards 365, that came about.
Justin, when we talk about alcohol and the way it's used in society, you know, we use it to celebrate, we use it when the sun comes out, we use it when it's raining because then you can go to the pub and you don't have to sit in the beer garden. There's every excuse under the sun, but of course a lot of the time it's when life is difficult, we use it to commiserate when we're feeling down and when bad things have happened. What you've shared with us today, it's as bad as it gets. You know, you lost a child and it's so very painful, and your brother and your mum. Yeah. And so you could quite easily have carried on drinking, couldn't you? Because that would have been, in many ways, I guess, the easy thing to do. But like you say, it's not, it doesn't remove those problems. It doesn't remove that grief. It just sort of, well, just leave it there. And it'll probably just get worse while we're drinking through it. What would you say to somebody listening now who is drinking because of pain, who is trying to numb out awful feelings, who has experienced maybe loss like yourself? What would you say? Because you, God knows how you did it, Justin. Every credit.
Sort of,
you know, every flipping credit. I echo everything that Ben has said. It is not easy. And yet here you are 4 years later, you've done it.
Yeah, I think it was coming to the realization within myself that it wasn't helping. It was while it was drumming it out for a time, it was actually leading to things getting potentially getting worse. Certainly my wife had noticed that there was a lot more bottles in the recycling. I was quite sneaky about things as well. But I do think the longer it goes on, that the you get into the cycle of feeling bad, so you drink to numb the feelings, and the alcohol tends to put fuel on the fire. And it can be tough and it can be painful to say, right, no, I've got to take a break. The alcohol is not going to help. And you have to come to that realization within yourself and sort of take a good hard look. If you're starting to feel more anxious the next day, suddenly it feels like everybody at work seems to be having a go at you. It ends up feeding in on itself. You drink to numb the feelings, but the feelings come back. Heart can come back harder and worse when that alcohol is out of your system. And so if you continue that cycle, it's going to get worse when you do have to face it. So it's a case of you have to sort of take the horse by the reins and say, no, I'm going to have to learn to deal with it. There's a lot of good books out there on dealing with grief. Get counselling if you feel that's right for you. Talk to your partner, your significant other. Talk to family, talk to friends. Find the people that can understand and can listen. And there are support groups out there. It's really important. If you don't have to do it on your own, and it's sort of sometimes having someone as a sounding board is the best thing you can do, to just have someone listen and get these feelings out. Talk about them. Talk about the person you've lost often and always. And remember the time that you've had with them, even if it's only a very short time. And I have to say, my wife Lucy, the lovely Lucy, she was been a big supporter of me through that whole time when she started seeing the change, and I had to come clean and say, well, look, I was doing very sneaky stuff. I'd stash the bottles under the sofa till the next morning, and then I'd quickly whip them to the car so they wouldn't be in the recycling. I even use it's funny in a sad kind of way. My wife had a way. She always knew if I'd been drinking, because apparently my voice would go higher pitched whenever I drank. So I ended up I almost sounded like Mickey Mouse, according to my wife. So what I would do is I would get sort of some low alcohol ciders, and I would drink those. I'd have sort of some strong ones that I would drink first, and then I'd have these low alcohol ciders that I would put on display and say, well, I've only been drinking these. And I was actually drinking very low alcohol or alcohol free ciders as a masker. That's
crazy, isn't it?
That was the lengths I was going to try and hide, is because I didn't want this impacting on the rest of my family. But it was leaking out. So it was a case of it did have to be dealt with at some point. And I'm just grateful that I happened to come across a community of people who were changing their relationship with alcohol.
Justin, there's so many things that you've said that I'm going to take away from this. And, you know, one of the big ones for me, I love that you are just advocating talk. You know, don't keep, as a bloke, I think, you know, we still, and there's a lot of narratives in society about men's mental health, how, you know, men keep things in, we're stoic, we're quiet, we're, you know, there's a lot of crap actually that surrounds kind of what does it mean to be a man? What is masculinity?
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you can be strong and feel weak at the same time. You know, I think it's really, it's amazing to, I always think that whenever you hear a man advocate, you know, open up, speak, yeah, talk to somebody, find professional help. Like if that's what you need at that point, there's absolutely no shame in that whatsoever.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you're weak. It means that you're strong. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. Yeah. And you know what? It's even little things like, I got a bit emotional in the middle. I was thinking straight after that, I was like, okay, I can edit some of that out. I said to you at the beginning before we started recording, if you say something that you don't want to be there, and you know, this podcast is being pre-recorded, it's not live, so we can always stop, start. So this is my normal kind of producer spiel to every guest. We can stop, start, say something again. If you say something you think later, God, I wish I never said that, don't worry, I can just remove it before it gets published to the world. And I did think after, I was like, actually, I feel a bit uncomfortable that I've just showed that kind of side, and I've been emotional like that, and you know, this is Justin's story, and you know, I can take some of that out. Actually, no, I probably shouldn't, you know. It's, I think, you know, seeing and hearing you speak about what is, like Shaz says, just the worst thing, you know, just what an awful, dreadful series of events to happen, and to know that you've, and I don't want to repeat what I said earlier on, because you know, I don't want to keep blowing smoke at your ass, Justin, but it's but honestly, I think it's so important, you know, a community member watching, your story is so inspirational. It is inspirational, and it's please keep sharing it, please keep saying yes sir when you get invited onto different podcasts, like, you know, as many people, but for me as well, men need to hear your story and how you speak about it. So thank you so much for being so open and so honest with us today. I massively appreciate it. I know Shaz does as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely fantastic. Justin, it's been a real pleasure, and I echo everything Ben has said there. Thank you. Thank you for talking so honestly about Maximus. As we're still friends on Facebook. It's glorious to see your beautiful family. And of course, you've spoken so highly of your wife, Lucy, as well. I'm just so chuffed we met all those years ago. You know, you were already, so hang on, you hit 4 years in July. So I'm only
September.
September. So I'm always chasing your ass, Justin. You might be dressed as an OG.
Don't tell Lucy that.
Not in that way. Not in that way. I meant round by the Spartan course.
Yes.
Obstacle racing.
I think it would be great to see some more alcohol-free communities get involved in Spartan racing, because that seemed like a wonderful thing that happened just before all of this pandemic drama, and it suddenly all just disappeared, and it's sort of like, I'd love to see some more alcohol-free sort of Spartan and people giving obstacle racing a go, because it's kind of, there are parallels with life through obstacle racing and going through the journey of going alcohol-free and overcoming obstacles, using help and support from others around you. And it can create such a buzz. And it's, I mean, we both know the lovely Anne Gash, Spartan.
She's amazing. She's been on the pod, Justin.
Yeah, I know. I listened to her episode, because I bump into her at the Spartan events. And I would love to see more people use this, because it was such a powerful thing on my alcohol-free journey, that sort of, because it present as sort of like, it showed up things that I needed to change. And there are still highs and lows in life, but certainly that alcohol free makes those challenges, it makes, you've got the ability to suddenly go, right, how do I problem solve this? What, do I go over it? Do I go under it? Do I go around it? Do I go just straight through the obstacle?
Well, like me, get stuck on top of it. So.
You didn't.
When you're up there, enjoy the view.
I had to get removed off one of those really high climbs.
What? By what? By people?
Just by strong men. I'm like, oh, I'm stuck. Help me down.
Did you get stuck on the next obstacle?
And again, surprisingly, it happened about 25K. I was always stuck at the top. Justin, thank you. I'm so glad that we're rounding up this episode with laughter and smiles, and because, it's brilliant. You've got a big smile on your face. It's great to see you. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And when you get off this call, I want you to go and do some research. Not me, by the way. If you notice, I'm like hoisting this all onto you. And come back to us. Let's have a think about something we could possibly do, because next year we've got a big diary of events for OTI Outdoor Adventures, and it would be good, you know, just to get together as a team and have a catch up, because
I think so, yeah.
Connection is everything. Justin, thank you. Actually, very quickly before you go, you've got a blog coming up that people can follow.
Yes, you can follow me at alcoholfreeaf.substack.com, and the AF stands for It's actually alcohol-free adventures and fitness.
Oh, you see, was it? I was going to assume something else there, and it rhymes with as yes. duck.
I sort of thought, well, if I put alcohol-free AF, that would have that delightful little play, and because AF was taken, so I couldn't do that. So it's alcohol-free adventures and fitness, alcohol-free AF.substack.com.
Justin, thank you. It's been emosh, but it's been really yes. lovely to catch up. Thank you.
Yeah, I look forward to catching up with you again, Shaz.
Once again, huge thank you to Justin for sharing so... for just sharing so honestly with us and over the influence. He's a lovely...
Great episode.
Lovely chap, honestly.
That's going to go down as one of my favourites of all time. Like, what a man. And it's, you know, you get guests on occasionally that fundamentally make you think about things differently.
Completely.
And Justin has done that for me.
And actually, like, sometimes... some of the things you worry about and, you know, some of the things that bothered you when you were drinking and all the rest of it, listening to Justin's story, it sort of puts life into perspective, doesn't it? You know, it
absolutely.
It really, really does. And I knew he was a lovely guy when I first sort of came across him 4 years ago. And then when I did read his story, I just thought, oh, man. And we became friends, and it's been lovely. And we're both on a, you know, similar sort of timescale with the journey and all the rest of it. Just so chuffed to have him on the podcast. It's been lovely. And if, of course, you've been affected by any of the issues that Justin's talked about today, it has been it's been a really difficult listening part. You can drop us an email at any time and we can signpost you to various support services. Never forget that. OTIHQ@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Very quickly before we go, we've talked a lot actually during this episode, well, Justin has, about the importance of talking, you know, as he was saying, speak up, talk. Ben, you're a fella, your mates are lads. It's not always easy, is it? It really isn't, but I've seen it within our community. Sometimes you just can't get the fellas to shut up, Ben.
Which is fabulous.
Which is great.
It really is. And you know what? If you fancy some of that, by the way, overtheinfluence.co.uk, I was chuffed to hear that Justin's going to be doing more of that on his blog too. Please go and have a look at Justin's blog. And you know what, Shaz? We should ask him to write for ours, because our blog is a free resource. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk, click on the read section at the top. It says listen. It's the podcast that you're listening to right now. Click on the read section. We've got loads of different... Like, Charlie's our main writer, the fabulous Charlie Martina. We've got loads of different guest bloggers on there as well. Justin, we need to get him on there as a guest blogger. It's a free resource, and we know that people love Quitlet. It's kind of like a quick Quitlet section.
Say that again, but say it quickly.
A quick Quitlet. Red lorry, yellow lorry. Red lorry, yellow lorry. But it is really, it's great. It's kind of like bite-sized Quitlet. That's easier to say.
That's better.
So go and have a look. overtheinfluence.co.uk. Click on the read section. We've got loads of stuff to talk about these days, haven't we, Shaz?
We never stop. Never stop. Yeah. And actually, you know, there's some days, Ben, I do get sick of the sound of my own voice. Yet here
you're
we are.
One who bloody edits us for hours. This, the premium podcast, bloody end. Anyway, thank you for listening to another week of Over the Influence. We will be back next week, because we're going to be here every week for the rest of time.
For the rest of eternity.
The series that never ended, and we're very quickly approaching our 100th episode. OMG. We need to do something special for that.
That is really, really, really exciting. Same time next week. Thank you as always for listening.